I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Working on the theory that you can skin a sucker in space as well as on Earth, the Khan team of Harding and Sheckley operated furtively but profitably among natives of the outer planets. That is, until there was a question of turnabout being fair play in a world where natives took their skinning literally. Skin Game by Charles E. Fritsch. That's next on the Lost Sci-Fi Podcast. It's been more than 2 years since Charles E. Fritsch has been on the podcast with a story called Danger in the Void. Let's go back in time almost 70 years ago and open the pages of the May 1954 publication of If Worlds of Science Fiction. You will find two stories we've featured previously: Prominent Author by Philip K. Dick and Foresight's Retreat by Winston Marks. Our third story from that magazine is found on page 55. Skin Game by Charles E. Fritsch. "People are basically alike," Harding said democratically. He sat idly against the straw-like matting of the hut wall and reached for a native fruit in a nearby bowl. "They're all suckers, even the smartest of them. In fact, the ones who think they're the smartest generally wind up to be the dumbest." Carefully, he bit into the fruit, which resembled an orange, and, mouthful, nodded approvingly, "Say, these aren't bad. Try one." Sheckley shook his head, determined to avoid as many aspects of this culture as he could. "But these aren't people," he reminded, not happy with the thought. "They're lizards." Harding shrugged and settled back, his grinning features ruddy in the flaring torchlight. "Humanoids have no monopoly on suckerhood. When it comes to that, we're all brothers under the skin, no matter what color or how hard the skin may be." He sighed, contemplating the harvest to be. "No, Sheckley, it'll be like taking candy from a baby. We'll be out of here with our pockets bulging before the space patrol can bat an eyelash in this direction." Unconvinced, Sheckley stared glumly through the open doorway of the hut into the warm, humid night, where a fire flared in the darkness, and long shadows danced and slithered around it. "It's not the space patrol I'm worried about," he said after a while. "I don't mind fleecing humanoids." He shivered, grimacing. "But lizards?" Harding laughed. "Their riches are as good as anybody else's. The trouble with you, Sheckley, you're too chicken-hearted. If it weren't for me, you'd still be small-timing back on Earth." It takes imagination to get along these days, Sheckley grunted, for he had no ready answer to deny this truth. While he didn't like the reference to his inability to get along in the world without Harding's help, the man was right about other things. It did take imagination, all right, mixed with a generous supply of plain, ordinary guts. That, plus an eye focused unfalteringly on the good old credit sign. He certainly could not get along without Harding's timing. The man knew just when patrol ships would be at certain spots, knew their schedules for visiting these small other worlds, and always he was several steps ahead of them. They went into a planet, their rocket ship loaded with gambling devices, cards, dice, roulette wheels, and other cultural refinements, and set up shop which could be folded at a moment's notice, if necessary. Natives seemed almost eager to be skinned of their riches, and he and Harding happily obliged them. "Listen to them out there," Harding marveled, leaning forward to hear the sharp scrapings that represented music. "They must be having some kind of ceremony." Sheckley nodded, shivering slightly, though the air was hot and humid. He wished again, as he often had in the past, he could have some of Harding's assurance, some of that unrelenting optimism that insisted everything would turn out favorably. But he didn't like these strange primitive worlds. He didn't trust them or their inhabitants. The lizard people had seemed friendly enough, but by looking at a strange reptile, you couldn't tell how far it would jump. When the Earthship landed, the creatures had come slithering to them with all but a brass band, welcoming the Earthlings with the hissings that compose their language. One of them, the official interpreter, he proclaimed himself, knew a peculiarly good brand of English, and welcomed them in a more satisfactory manner. But still, Sheckley didn't like it. Harding had called him chicken-hearted, and he felt a certain amount of justified indignance at the description. Cautious would be a better word, he decided. These people appeared friendly to the Earthlings, but so did the Earthlings give the appearance of friendliness to the natives. That was proof in itself that you couldn't trust actions to indicate purpose. But even more than that, their basic alienness troubled Sheckley more than he dared admit aloud. Differences in skin color and modified body shapes were one thing, but when a race was on a completely different evolutionary track, it was a time for caution. These were a different people, on a different planet, under a different star. Their customs were strange. How strange, he could yet only guess, though he preferred not to. This ceremony now, for example, what did it mean? A rite for some serpent god, perhaps? A dance in honor of the Earthmen's arrival? Or it might just as easily be a preliminary to a feast at which the visitors would be the main course. "I just wish we knew more about the creatures," he complained, trying to shove that last thought from his mind. Harding looked annoyed as he drew his attention from the alien music which had fascinated him. "Stop worrying, will you? They're probably among the friendliest creatures in the universe, even if they do look like serpents out of Eden, and the friendly ones rate A1 on my sucker list." Sheckley shuddered and cast an annoyed glance into the night. "How can anybody concentrate with that infernal racket going on out there? Don't they ever sleep?"
"Patience," Harding advised calmly, "is a noble virtue. Ah, here comes our interpreter."
Sheckley stared involuntarily as a scaly head thrust itself into the hut. The serpent man had a long, sharp knife gleaming in one hand.
"Pardon, sirs," the head said slurringly, as a forked tongue sorted over the unfamiliar syllables. "The leader wishes to know, will you join us?"
"No, thanks," Sheckley said, staring at the knife. Harding said,
"We should join them. We don't want to offend these creatures.
and if we're real friendly, we might make out better.
You go out, then. I'm going to see if I can get some sleep.
Harding shrugged, his glance making it plain he knew Sheckley lacked nerve more than sleep. To the Serpent Man, he said, "Tell your leader my companion is tired from our long journey and would rest now. However, I will be happy to join you."
"Yes," the serpent head hissed and withdrew. "Boy, will I be glad to get out of here,"
Sheckley muttered. "Sometimes I wonder why I ever teamed up with a pansy like you, Sheckley," Harding said harshly, a disgusted look on his face. "There are times when I regret it." He turned and walked from the hut. Sheckley stared bitterly after him. He felt no anger at the denunciation, only a plaguing irritableness, an annoyance with both Harding and himself. He should have gone out there with Harding, if only to show the man that he was not afraid, that he was no coward. And yet, as he sat there listening to the strange sounds creeping across the warm dampness, he made no move to rise, and he knew he would not. Grunting disgustedly, Sheckley stretched out on the floor matting and tried to think of other things. He stared at the orange flaring torch and contemplated putting it out. But the sounds from the outside drifted in upon him and changed his mind. After a while, he closed his eyes and dozed.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
He woke suddenly and sat upright, a cold sweat making him tremble. What had wakened him, he wondered. He had the vague notion that somebody had screamed. Yet he wasn't sure. In the faltering torchlight, he could see Harding had not returned. He listened intently to the noises outside, the scraping, the hissing, the slithering. No screams came. "I'm not going to stay here," he told himself. "I'll leave tomorrow. I don't care what Harding says. I'll go crazy if I have to spend another night like this." Exhausted, he fell asleep. Morning came, and the alien sun slanted orange rays through the cabin doorway. Sheckley opened his eyes and stared at the thatched roof. The torch had burned out, but it was no longer needed for light. Thank goodness for morning, he thought. Morning brought a temporary sanity to this world, and after the madness of the night, it was a reprieve he welcomed gladly. He had not opposed Harding till now, but desperation was a strong incentive to rebellion. When Harding returned, startled, he considered the thought. When Harding returned? He sat up and stared around him. Harding was not in sight. Panic came, and he leaped up, blood racing, as though to defend himself against invisible enemies. Perhaps he'd gotten up early, Sheckley thought. But suppose he hadn't returned? Suppose he jumped as the interpreter entered the hut behind him.
"The leader wishes you to join him for eating," the Serpent Man said.
"No," Sheckley said hastily. They weren't going to make a meal out of him.
"No, thanks. Look, I've got to leave your planet. Leave, understand? Right away,"
"The leader wishes you to join him," the creature repeated. This time the sword crept into his hands. Shekley stared at the sword, and his heart leaped. He thought there was a tinge of red on the blade's edge. Mentally, he shook his head. No, it was just his imagination again. Just imagination. Still, the drawn sword clearly indicated that the invitation was not to be refused. "All right," he said weakly. "All right, in a few minutes."
"Now,"
the other said.
"Okay. Now,"
the earthling agreed listlessly.
"Where is my companion?"
"You will see him,"
the creature promised. Shekley breathed a sigh of relief at that. Harding was probably all right then. It made him feel better, though it would make the task of leaving much harder. They had arrived at twilight the previous day, so they hadn't had the opportunity to see the village in its entirety. They hadn't missed much, Shekley realized as he walked along, for the grouped huts were unimpressive, looking somewhat like a primitive African village back on Earth. But the Earthling would have preferred the most primitive Earth native to these serpents. In the distance, the slim nose of the rocket ship pointed the way to freedom, and Shekley looked longingly at it. At one end of the village was a small mountain of what appeared to be plastic clothing, milkily translucent, which was strange since these creatures wore no clothing. The Earthling wondered at this, but did not ask about it. Other thoughts, more important, troubled him.
"In here," the interpreter told him, stopping before the largest hut.
Hesitating briefly, Shekley entered, and the creature followed him in. Seated on the floor were the leader and his mate, and several smaller reptiles that evidently were the children. Between them lay several bowls of food. Shekley grimaced and turned hastily away as he saw small crawling insects in one bowl.
"Sit down,"
the interpreter directed. Harding was not in evidence.
"Where's my companion?"
he asked. The interpreter conferred briefly with the leader, then told Shekley,
"He could not come down. Sit down. Eat."
Shekley sat down, but he didn't feel like eating. He wondered why Harding could not come. At a sudden thought, he said,
"I have rations on my ship.
Eat," the interpreter said, gripping his sword. Shekley nodded weakly and reached out for the bowl of fruit, taking one that resembled that which Harding had eaten the previous night. It wasn't bad. The leader stuffed a fistful of squirming insects in his mouth and offered the bowl to Shekley, who shook his head as politely as he could and indicated the fruit in his hand. Fortunately, the serpent man did not insist on his taking anything other than fruit, so the meal passed without physical discomfort. When they were through, the leader hissed several syllables to the interpreter, who said,
"The leader wishes to see your games. You will set them up now."
Shekley ran his tongue over dry lips. "They're in the ship," he said, and eagerness crept into his voice.
"I'll have to get them."
Once inside the ship, he'd never come back. He'd slam the airlock door and bolt it, and then blast off as fast as he could get the motors going, Harding or no Harding. He got up.
"We will help you," the interpreter said.
"No, I can do it myself."
"We will help you,"
the interpreter insisted firmly. His eyes bored into the Earthling, as though daring him to refuse again. Shekley's mouth felt dry once more.
"Where's Harding?"
he demanded.
"Where's the other Earthman? What have you done with him?"
The interpreter looked at the leader, who nodded. The interpreter said gravely,
"It is too bad. It is the season for the shedding of skins. At the shedding feast last night."
"The shedding of skins?" Shekley said, remembering the pile he'd seen at one corner of the village.
Those translucent things were your cast-off skins? He recalled that some reptiles back on Earth had regular seasons of shedding. That intelligent creatures should do it made him feel slightly sick.
Your friend joined us last night,
the Serpent Man went on.
But he could not shed properly, so...
Shackley felt his blood turn to ice.
So we helped him.
You what?
We helped him out of his skin,
the Serpent Man went on calmly.
We try to help those who are friends with us. Your friend had trouble getting his skin off, but with our help...
No!
The Earthling cried, trying to reject the thought. The full realization of what had happened struck him at once. Despite himself, he could picture Harding struggling, trying to convince these creatures that Earthlings don't shed their skins. His struggles must have convinced them only that he was having trouble shedding. So they helped him. They had come to skin the natives, but the reverse was happening, only literally.
Where is he?
He asked finally, though he knew it didn't really matter.
We will take you to him, the interpreter said.
No,
Shekley cried.
No, I'd rather not.
The Serpent Man nodded.
As you wish. He does not look pretty. I hope that tonight you do not have as much trouble.
Shekley's eyes went wide.
What do you mean?
In your shedding,
the Serpent Man explained.
We will try to help you all we can, of course.
Of course,
the Earthling agreed weakly, licking cottony lips. He wondered how he could just stand there, so apparently calm, instead of letting out a shriek and running as fast as he could for the rocket ship. He decided it was some sort of paralysis. The shock of finding himself in the middle of something so alien, his mind told him it couldn't possibly be. Knees wobbling, Shekley went to the door and out into the morning. That he had gotten that far surprised him pleasantly. The tall rocket ship was in a clearing several yards beyond the edge of the village. He headed for it. He thought of running, but his legs felt like rubber, his blood like ice. He walked past the pile of drying skins on the ground without looking at them, and he was followed by the interpreter and several others whom the Serpent Man had motioned to join them. Except for their swords, they had no weapons, he noticed. Poor Harding, he thought, and wondered if the Earthling's skin were somewhere in the pile. He felt sick thinking about it.
You'd better stay outside the ship, he suggested testily. I'll lower the equipment to you.
I will go aboard with you,
the Serpent Man said.
But I will go aboard with you.
Shekley shrugged, but he hardly felt complacent. He felt as though a giant icy hand held onto his spine with a firm, paralyzing grip. He trembled visibly.
Got to think, he told himself desperately. Got to plan this out.
But fear jumbled his thoughts, and he could only think of Harding back in the village, minus his skin, and what was going to happen that night if all went as these creatures planned. The second thought was the more terrifying. And when they were within 100 feet of the rocket ship, Shekley broke into a frantic run.
Stop!
The interpreter cried. Shekley had no intentions of stopping. His glands told him to run, and he ran. He ran as fast as he could and didn't look back. He imagined the Serpent Man was on his heels, knife poised, and he ran even faster. He reached the rocket ship and went up the ladder, scrambling, missing his foothold, pulling himself up with clutching hands. He threw himself through the airlock and slammed the massive door behind him. He ran through the metal corridors to the control room.
They must be on the ladder, he thought.
prying at the airlock with their metal swords. He pressed switches, slammed down on the throttle, and the sweet music of the rockets came and pressed him into his seat. He looked down at the planet, dwindling into space below him, and he laughed hysterically, thinking of the narrow escape he'd had. No more planets for him. No more trying to skin anyone.
"There it goes," the space patrolman said, watching the rocket rise. Harding trembled with helpless rage. "That blasted fool Sheckley'll lead you right to the money, too," he complained.
"That's the way we planned it," the patrolman smiled. "I must compliment our native friends on their fine acting. Your pal took off like a scared rabbit."
"Yeah," Harding grimaced, clenching his fists as though wishing he had someone's neck in them.
"Don't blame your friend too much," the patrolman advised. "Whether you realize it or not, the fact that you were consciously avoiding our schedules caused you to follow a pattern in your visits to these outer space planets. We just figured a bit ahead of you and posted hidden patrols on all the inhabited planets in the sector, knowing that sooner or later you'd land on one of them. We spotted your ship last night and hurried over by copter so we wouldn't be seen."
"Forget the synopsis," Harding growled. "You walked in when these blasted lizards were making believe they were going to skin me alive. They didn't have to act so realistic about it."
"You're wrong about one thing," the patrolman said. "The act didn't start until after we arrived to direct it."
Harding looked at him, puzzled.
"What do you mean by that?" "We arrived, as the books say, just in time," the patrolman told him. "They weren't making believe."
He offered a bowl of fruit to his prisoner.
"We'll be here for another hour yet. Eat something."
Weakly, Harding shook his head no. He sat down, suddenly pale at what the officer had said. He didn't feel very hungry.
Next, on the Lost Sci-Fi Podcast, as a mysterious star hurtles toward Earth, bringing with it unprecedented chaos and destruction, humanity grapples with the impending apocalypse and the uncertain fate of their world. Amidst the turmoil, a diverse array of individuals, from scientists to lovers, from scholars to refugees, navigate the cataclysmic events and search for meaning in the face of annihilation. The Star by H.G. Wells.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Megan Rinks.
And I'm Melissa D. Montz.
And like every other person with access to a microphone, we started a podcast.
On Mondays, we release Don't Blame Me, which is an advice podcast where listeners call in and we share our thoughts on situations such as what to do if you're going to your boyfriend's family function and you haven't told him that you previously slept with both his twin brothers.
Then on Thursdays, we release our podcast, But Am I Wrong?, where we ethically gossip about pop culture, politics, our lives, and your lives. Listeners write in and we tell them if they're wrong or right in a situation. Are you the hero or the villain?
On Tuesdays and Fridays, we throw in a little something extra as well.
Well, something, something. We strive to create a community grounded in activism, mental health, and inclusivity. Think of us as like your blunt, honest friends who give you advice that you need to hear, not what you want to hear. But we're also always rooting for your success. What we lack in credentials, we make up for in
opinions.
We do that in every episode too.
We're professional unprofessional, so if you're looking for a new slate of podcasts to add to your routine, we're here for you.
Acast recommends.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.